the department which we are doing assist us to portray what this department is doing in a short time space that we are in it. We are hoping that by other things that will be a reflection today, we'll achieve what we want. I do understand that this department and this committee were passionate about transformation, and I know we work hoping that we're going to listen very carefully on your presentation. The agenda is in front of us, and as we're seeing the agenda, that today is going to be a long day, and I'm proposing that we must amend the agenda by discussing 1.4 must be our number one, the reporting briefing of the organization, the financial performance, it must be number one. We are very sorry to you, Secretary, that we didn't notify you. And then on number two, it must be in a special group, the Chief Transformation Report. And then on number three, must be the African Sport Council. And the last one, UNESCO report. And we can I have a pitch now, must be the last item in the agenda, and 2 to 7-1 from above, 3 to be that we shall to be number 1, and 1.2 must be number 4. I'm proposing that we must do that, those amendments. Any second of agenda is amended. Let me take this opportunity saying that DG, we are also welcome with your colleagues, staff of our department. Can you take us through according to the agenda?
Thank you, sir. Good morning, and good morning to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation. I'm with today and accompanied by the CFO, Ms. Nadeshwe Dumere, and the parliamentary liaison officer, Ms. Thabo Kupa, and Ms. Kenneth Musonoff, the director responsible for and performance sport and scientific support. Chair, I would follow the agenda as amended, but I must hasten to indicate that as I present on the first agenda item, I will present it collectively with the CFO, that she looks at the financial matters as far as performance in the fourth quarter is concerned. Allow me also, Chair, to first start by thanking the leadership of the committee in that on the matter of school sports and the work that is currently being done with the Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Education and the progress that we are seeking to make. So as a consequence of the bilateral between our chair and the chair of the education, we will now move full speed to send the cabinet memorandum to cabinet to request that cabinet has the specific resolutions that are necessary to be able to drive school sport going forward. Among the things that we are requiring, because it's clear that after years of engagement with the education on their responsibilities in as far as the MOU is concerned, we've really made little progress in as far as that is concerned. And we are now requiring cabinet to take a resolution that will compel the education to bring forth an amendment to the South African Schools Act, making schools budget effectively for sport in terms of implementation of the three lower tiers of the nutrition that we envisage. Thirdly, we are also asking cabinet to compel the Department of Education to also enforce the current non-self-funded, the current RCD, or the Accelerator Schools Delivery Initiative program, to enforce the non-self-funded to ensure that all the new schools being built are built with the requisite sport facilities. And lastly, we are also asking cabinet to compel basic education to also resolve each issue in as far as the situation of the location of physical education is concerned and the delivery of quality physical education in schools. So I think, having said that, I have thought that it's appropriate noting the efforts the chair has been making at that level and the fact that we now indeed having escalated this matter to parliament and having even at this level not been able to succeed. We must move further. Should we not be in a position to achieve what we require, the next logical step for us would be to declare an intergovernmental dispute between us and the Department of Education, which will essentially force the presidency to mediate in the dispute between the two of us. We now believe that the time has come that we get to that point. But I wish to again thank the leadership of the chair in this regard and the work that has been done up to date so far. Let me move quickly to the presentation on quarter four of the performance information, and the CFO will deal with the financial report of quarter four. I must alert to you and start with a disclaimer that says that we aren't there yet in as far as this is concerned. We are still verifying data. Together with the AG, we are still tallying, and there has been a challenge that some of our programs submitted the data quite late, and we are still looking at it on a number of things. But as I reported to the committee at the first meeting of the year, I have also highlighted the point that says you will see significant improvements in quarter four, and I think the figures themselves speak to that reality, that we have met most of the targets in as far as that is concerned. Let me move to targets in Program 1, Administration. As you may see, we had 8 targets to be achieved here, and we were able to meet 6 of the 8. And I think the two that we didn't meet was first and foremost, we have not yet recorded whether the credit payment is within 30 days, because we arranged the treasury to them tell us where we are. Last time, our thing was average of 4 days, so we think that this time will be within the 30-day mark, but we normally keep this one green once we get the information from the treasury. So we are still waiting. Once we get it, we will put it in before the close of the audit process. We would have known significantly where we are, but we are confident we will be around the 30 days in terms of our calculations, which is still well within the 30-day mark. In as far as the other quarter, the information for performance, we have this target, which is quite strange, which said that we achieve this one if we have achieved every other thing. So it says 100% achievement of targets. So if you do not achieve one target somewhere, you're not going to meet this one. So, and I think this was the second target that we could not achieve. If you look in terms of Program 2, we have achieved almost out of the 10 targets we achieved, 6, and we say 4 are not achieved. And if you look at the ones we say we have not achieved, this is an area because Program 2 is active nation. This is where we are dependent on provinces. And that is what I was indicating earlier, that we are still waiting for verification of further data. We are confident that some of the remaining 4 targets we will be able to achieve. For instance, on the issue of the number of people actively participating in organized sport and active recreation events. This was with very high numbers of the people of every other thing that provinces have submitted. We only cheated once we have satisfied ourselves that the numbers have been properly verified. And that's why I'm saying we will have to await upon us. There is a target that likely we will not meet. And this one, the one on the number of schools has and plus provided with equipment, we are still confident we may meet this target. And the one on the number of active learners supported by sports academies, this one we also believe we would be able to meet. Yes, we will certainly meet that one. However, there is a target share on the number of participants in the school sport championships. We were quite close to the target, but we didn't meet it. And the reason for that, after verification, we realized that the number of provinces, when we calculate on service target, we look at the competition, the number of codes and age categories. Each and every province has expected to send children to play that specific code. If it is volleyball, for instance, 9 to 12 at primaries, and 12 to 15 year olds at high schools. So if one of the provinces does not field teams in those specific age categories, certainly the numbers go down. Provinces now, we are checking with them why teams were withdrawn. Sometimes schools are disqualified. We find that teachers have cheated in terms of age. They have put in, or sometimes they issue a certificate of another child for another. And because many of them don't have, particularly at primary level, do not have photos and all of this, it becomes quite a challenge. So we were almost next to the target that we simply did not make this one, which was a bit of a concern for us. If I move to Winning Nation Program 3, there you may be aware that when Treasury prioritized last year, we were supposed to meet the target that is the number of events supported. But the first casualty of withdrawal of funds was in this area. We were about 26 million was taken away from us after the FISMA's all process, and all departments were required to take cuts in the budget. So consequently, two of the mega events we were supposed to support were the international championships that were hosted in South Africa. This was withdrawn. And as a consequence of this, and for other reasons that the federation, some of them did not meet the requisite processes in as far as the bidding and hosting regulations are concerned, we had no option but to do that. So you may see that out of the potential 7 targets, only one was not met, but all other ships in international relations were met, including the support to anti-doping agencies of the continent in the region and globally, and all other major targets. But if I move to program 4, sports support chair, you would also notice that in this regard, we have achieved all the targets by quarter 4, and which means that we have been able to do everything we said we would do in as far as supporting sports federations and the work they do, including specific support on the transformation process, including on the financial and non-financial support we want to render. In as far as infrastructure support, we have met all the targets as well in this area, and we had indicated finalized the first facility count, and we are now in the process of verification. So when we are spending now, we feel the verification process being done. We are already at 79%. So as I've indicated at the last meeting, we believe that we will finish in the zone of 85% as I said earlier. So that's where we believe we will be around once we verify the remaining data, particularly on participants in the nation. So if we can be able to achieve two of those remaining targets, then it will take us in the region of 85. And most likely, if we add also the academies one, it will also push us to the Inakashan group at 90. So that's the reason we arrived at PLOS. So I'm not going to share into detail about the rest of the other targets we had. I only touched on the targets that we did not meet and we are still likely to meet and verify. So the CFO, with your permission, chair, will then take us through the financial situation at the end of the fourth quarter and where we are.
Thank you, DG. I forgot to present two apologies. Mr. McDevitt, written apology. Mr. Manana is attending a committee where they're going to vote for the session of the NYTA. So he's going to speak to the CFO.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McDevitt. I'm going to present the financial position of the department as at the 31st of March 2023. Chapter 3 came before the committee in the third quarter, we were hovering around 70% at that time. But they said that we'll be able to spend most of the money that has been appropriated to the department. I can say now that the department has spent 99.9% of our budget. We appropriated 980.8 million, we spent 979.9 million. In terms of compensation of employees, we spent 99% as well. We appropriated 93.7 million, 94.3 million. We spent 93.7 million. There were some vacancies that were filled for junior and middle management position, which will be filled, which we are currently filling in the current financial year. In terms of goods and services, we also spent 99%. Out of a budget of 167.8 million, we spent 165.5 million. Transfers, we've overspent with 2 million, that's what you really have to say, because there's a million that have to go off at the end of financial. In terms of paying for capital assets, we spent 93% of our budget. We appropriated 2.1 million, we spent 2 million. In terms of the digital, in slide number, I think it's slide number 4. We, like I said, we spent 979 million, we had a budget of 908 million, we underspent 976 million, which is 99.9%. There's a change in terms of that slide. I'll move to programs. Program 1 was appropriated 114.5 million budget, in terms of budget, we spent 114.4 million, we underspent with 60,000, which is 99.9%. In terms of compensation of employees, the program overall overspent with 4.9 million. There was a budget of 64.3 million. There was an expenditure of 69 million. Goods and services, budget of 47.8 million. There was an expenditure of 42.9 million. There was another spend of 4.9 million. In terms of transfers, there were transfers, the budget was 79,000, so 77,000. In terms of capital assets, there was a budget of 2.1 million, we spent about 2 million, there was an underspend of 159,000, which is 93%. In terms of program chairperson, the budget was 652.2 million, there was an expenditure of 652.1 million. There was an underspend of 37,000, which is 99% of our budget. Compensation of employees, we spent 67% of our budget. We had a budget of 11.2 million. We spent about 7.9 million. We spent expenditure 73.8 out of a budget of 21 million. There was an overspend of 2.8 million. In terms of transfers, we overspent with about 866,000. In terms of program 3, we underspend with about 341,000, which is about 99% of our budget. We had a budget of 67.1 million. There was an expenditure of 56.5 million. In terms of compensation of employees, we underspend 1.3 million out of a budget of 3.8 million, which is about 65% of the total budget of compensation of employees. With the services, there was underspend of about 60,000 rand. There was a budget of 24.7 million. We spent 24.6 million. In terms of transfers, there was overspend of about 756,000 out of a price of 28.6 million, we spent about 11.3 million. When you move to sports support, the program has spent about 88,000 out of a budget of 154 million, we spent about 153.9 million. In terms of compensation of employees, has spent about 308 million, 308,000. Goods and services, 42,000. Transfers and subsidies, we overspent about 257,000. While we moved to infrastructure support, we had a budget of 2.9 million, we spent 2.8 million, we underspent about 150,000. In terms of compensation of employees, we had a budget of 2 million, we spent about 1.9. Goods and services, we spent about 800,000, we had a budget of 907,000. We underspent 45,000. I think the most important thing to note, certainly, is that the department has always been able to spend most of its budget that was appropriated. We spend 99.9% of our budget, which is, I think, is commendable. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. One of the members, may I take a hand that we must engage with this presentation? Honorable Bachman, any other hand? Honorable Ranhoff, Honorable Bell, you got your order.
Chair, thank you very much. Obviously, transformation is going to be a big topic, and I think looking at the quarterly report, our foundation for transformation, as I've always stated, is the schools. Now we're seeing that, as the DG has mentioned, there's a lot of underachievement when it comes to our schools, and this is a multi-functional effort. You know, it does take education, it does take help to come in and support us. Now, if the politicians cannot get in their diary to have a joint committee meeting, maybe we've got to leave it to the DGs of both departments to engage with each other and find a way. I know that we've got projects such as Lovelock and others that we pay for that are meant to increase mass participation. And every year we get told how great they're doing as an organization, but when you look at SRSA's quarterly performance, and they don't seem to marry each other. You know, if Lovelock was working at 100%, I would assume that mass participation in schools would be increasing and that we would be engaging more. I made the suggestion in the past, I'll make it again. The schools should be held responsible for mass participation. We should be held responsible for the coaches. What we should do is we should be trying to find ways in which we can get physical education into the curriculum, and then find ways in which we can assist the school in ensuring mass participation. But on our side, what we can help with is by improving on the coaches, by training the coaches, ensuring their skills, and ensuring that they motivate children to get involved. We've often heard of Springboks or coaches or any of the other national sports, and they say that the biggest influence in life was their coach. And if you've got the right coach, I know that when we went on out to Giani, we've seen principals that were good, and they worked with nothing, and then we saw principals that got a lot, and they still couldn't produce. And I think the lesson there is sometimes it's in the mind of the person. If you get someone that really is a go-getter, no matter what you give them or don't give them, they're going to try and make something out of it. More worrying to me, however, and it's just a paragraph in the quarterly report it says, and what we've heard in the headlines, and I just would like to kind of report back here as well we can from the DG in terms of what happened, how we rectify it, how we can ensure that we have a testing station open, fully licensed and fully compliant ASAP. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think we could really conclude with ourselves, Chair, and the department, that the biggest problem that we've been having is the chair that is getting over the issue of school sport. And
Just two provinces. those two provinces don't have many states, if you look at it. And if unsustainable, we cannot be able to do it right across all provinces. We simply just don't have the capacity to do it. But we just wanted to demonstrate that where there is a commitment, it can be done. And it happens there. However, to ask us to also go to second level, it would be impossible. Basic education has to do that part. And yes, the schools, those that afford already and also charge the school levy, already the learners are playing. Then there is no dispute about it. You see that even where school governing bodies appoint an additional teacher who has a better teaching load but spend more time on the sports field because that's what the contract is a coach type of teacher. Those schools thrive well and they are doing extremely well. And that's why there's solid state of affairs in our country that majority of players for our national teams in rugby and cricket and hotels are produced by fairly between 50 and 90 schools and that about it. So it cannot go on like that. So I think we agree with you that yes, the responsibility is there. But now we don't have the luxury, we and our provincial department responsible for sport and recreation. We do not have the luxury. Because otherwise if we were to say if the second tournament and the local festival as well as the district tournament did not take place, therefore we don't do provincial and national, then there will be no sport completely for children. So we are getting our hands there, we have to divert resources. We also have to buy keys for schools. Typically, even when I was at school under the harsh days of apartheid, the school bought the key. From the school fees we were paying and everything, the schools bought us. So there has been unintended consequences of some of our policies, including declaring Pendletown one school such a non-paying schools. Because you should have accepted the parents who say it's really in a campaign on the administration. But to simply exempt all parents to say no one must pay, the school must just run on the basis of the grant it receives. So that grant is really not adequate. But you could imagine in a school of 500 kids, even if 100 parents were paying, there would be money used for a cheap kid, for football or for netball or for something. But now the policy is what it is. It's total exclusion by parent in a specific locality. So schools don't really have money. They barely have enough, even sometimes to replace broken relocations and all of this. I'm sure members will know the horror stories that are reported about and so on about the things that are not being fixed. So to ask such a school to go out of its way and buy sport equipment and all of this is asking for too much. But this means half treasures for us. It means that whereas correctly, as you point out, we should have been focused on the program to train coaches exclusively and all of that, we do not have the luxury to do that. The funds limited as they are have got to be split halfway. A portion of it must buy some equipment and do that. A portion of it must train the coaches and so on. And which is just a story for South Africa. In 2012, members would recall, we asked all federations to submit data of how many technical officials they have. And we also asked them to submit how many registered athletes they have. And when we challenged the numbers and we looked at the number of coaches available, this had been the number of registered players. And remember, for some, this figure may even be higher because for some federations, the arrival keeping is not that well. So we believe that the numbers submitted to us are grossly underestimated because there will be many township clubs and which are not really, they play the sport, but are not really affiliated with the federation directly. So, and this you find in such as like football a lot. There's a club that people run their private things outside from, 15 clubs in the community, and then boom, they play over Easter or something. Those clubs do exist, they are good, but they haven't necessarily registered in the local football association. So when the number of athletes are counted, those athletes aren't being counted as registered athletes. So we think the number is going to go high, but when we compare, our ratio was 1 to 819. For every 819 participants, we have 1.5 coach, which is a far cry compared to the international norm, because if you look at the UK, Now they are at 1 to 43. And they are still polishing. They're actually saying that they must train more volunteers because they are taking the ratio of 1:25. So we are just benchmarking on 1:40. But that's where we need to be. But that shuttle the community area that if we are to reach that in 20 years, we need to be training at least 70,000 coaches again for 20 years. This is the difficult task we have to speak. But do we have money for this? No. Previously, our output, we at Lascog, average about 300 a year coaches across all coaches qualified, at least on level one of the Lascog coaching framework. But we are seeing support as well, given it more money. Now they are training about 5,000 coaches a year. Even with 5,000, it's a far cry to the 17,000 we need to train. So yeah, if the situation was otherwise, the policy choices and funding choices would have been very, very different. We would have, the schools were doing this as they expected to do. Obviously the money now we are currently spending directly on schools would have been diverted towards purely focusing on coaches, and we would have been confident that we can train 17,000. But added to this, remember it took us 3 years to get the Capacita at least to approve one training provider, which is SCORE. All along there's not been an accredited training provider to train coaches on the NASCOR coaching framework level one. There's not been. Even SCORE now is trying to get its materials accredited for level two and level three. But they are only accredited at level one, and that's where we can only. So these aren't advanced coaches, these are simple coaches. They just do the basics, of course. So, and that's the dilemma our conversations in this regard. So, but we do agree with you. I must also hasten and say that the issue of lab life will never have capacity, in all fairness, to reach our schools, just by the sheer size of who they are and what they do. So, we have decided, therefore, on a targeted approach. So now we have expanded their mandate to reach districts. Previously, it was only provincial and national. But we have now expanded their mandate to reach districts, and we have reduced our expectations on the number of programs they have to focus on. So the more we take a more strategic focus to our choices, the better for what they can. Obviously, with limited resources, you have limited choices to make, and you also have the challenge that you will not be able to satisfy everyone. So wherever they may have been used that we reached before through the lab gates, when we decide that the lab gates must go away to favor and redirect the money to district such betterment, you have made a difficult choice, and those kids that used to benefit in that way are now going to be complainers who say, but this thing is no longer being done for us. So I think it's an issue of hard pressure that we face today, but FAA we do agree. On the issue of anti-looking, and the testing station in Bloomfield City. Honorable members, as you know, the WADA doping codes, world anti-doping codes, prohibits other countries to interfere or to participate in any way in the administration of a doping control laboratory. And they also prohibit institutes like SAIT or National Anti-Doping Agencies from actually having a share in the running and everything of the laboratories. WADA wants to accredit the laboratories directly and have direct relationship with those laboratories. And with it comes certain difficulties and frustrations. So here you have a laboratory based at university. In other countries, they are based either at a hospital. In other countries, like in Germany, they are based with scientific research bodies, and some are private, some are public. But the structuring is never the same. In our case, they are at the university. Ever since the anti-doping code was adopted, another came with this, only two laboratories have ever managed to meet that threshold on the African continent. It was the one in Tunisia, run by a private testing laboratory, the one in Bloemfontein, here in South Africa, at the University. Now, since then, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, successfully. The Swedish laboratory was shut down after he failed the threshold testing protocol. In our case, our laboratory has been doing well. While we are not allowed to say anything, previously we have given that laboratory money. And we have also, through the lotto, given them testing equipment. But it is a fallacy to say we as government are responsible for the closure of the laboratory or otherwise. In fact, there are three key reasons why that laboratory may be closed by one. First, if it scientifically is unable to meet its quality testing. Secondly, if that laboratory has doesn't account for everything it has and there seems to be government interference in what it is doing. And lastly, if it doesn't meet the number of minimum requisite tests it needs to make in a year. Previously the figure was at 3,000 tests a year, now it's at 3,500 tests a year. Our laboratory group on tape was barely making that figure. And we went to the region to ask, and we have a regional decision of Region 5 of the EU Sports Council, that all countries of SADC will then test here as option in their tests to Europe. There was a challenge, port health, particularly because countries like Angola still have diseases like dengue fever and so on. So the act controlling the movement of human substances and human fluids and all of this was a stumbling block. Each time the test arrived at the airport in Johannesburg or wherever they arrived, port health put them under quarantine. And they couldn't go on to go to Bloemfontein. And after a period, because they can be tested within a specific period, after a period they become useless. So when you are in tournament and you are somewhere in Ghana and you want your test to be done and to be done quickly before you are on the medal, expecting like turnaround times of 24 hours. And that the flight lands and then samples are taken and they fly then to Bloemfontein and they get tested quickly and then the results are sent through electronically. This we are not able to achieve. But I must assure you that in 2013, I signed an agreement with the DG of Health, paying for Port Health to allow this under special quarantine thing. And also, when the All Africa Games were in Mozambique, when they arrived, they were also escorted by Port Health all the way by roads from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein for testing. And that Port Health was at sea. And that we had a proper generator in Bloemfontein that after this, samples are not kept of samples that come from countries that are called high risk. So that immediately after testing and if there is no dispute, then incinerated them disposed of properly. We as government did our part to make sure that all of that is addressed. So we had removed all the stumbling blocks. They were now able to test. Then, before the figure was 3,500, they were able to test about 3,600 every year. So they were having the numbers, they were getting the necessary money. Two, the region asked for a special rate as Africa Zone 6 or now Region 5 to say, please give us that because we're bringing in bulk all our samples and so on. First, the laboratory refused, which then meant that some countries of the region began to pull out of the arrangement that they started testing again in Europe, meaning that the number of tests that went down, only because they found that it was cheaper for them to test in Europe than to test here in South Africa. So, which was a bit of a challenge. With it, there was then limited revenue, and the university stopped investing. The university then said, if this is a center of this nature, it can no longer subsidize. Must be self-sustainable, which meant that the costs were higher. They had to reduce the number of analysts. With the drop in the number of analysts, it meant that so many tests could no longer be done quicker. So which meant basically fewer turnaround times and fewer services, more countries left. So within no time, in the space of 2 years, the laboratory had moved from where it was very sharp to where now it has limited capacity. And it also has limited staff capacity and training. didn't fall by the wayside. What compounded the problems was that we hosted the water conference member below in Johannesburg, and we adopted the new code. In terms of that code, we were given 2 years to prepare and to buy a new message. Previously, in terms of the old code, we were not doing things like we're testing only urine samples. But now we had an obligation to do EPO tests, blood oxygenation tests, all of that, which requires totally new equipment. One of the machines to test the EPO costs in the region of 26 million, just for one. And it can do analysis of about 2 tests a day. So if you are to do like anything for the concrete marathon or whatever, a sample of that, so you can imagine the number of machinery you require. And you can do your mathematics. And the university wasn't willing to budge. So we had then sought advice from the treasury as to how we can support them, help the laboratory. And they said the only way we can do it, Section 38, IJ of the TSNA, is quite clear. If I'm the transferring officer, I must satisfy myself that the money will be used and used for the right purpose. The only way I foresee that I can do that, if that center we enter the public-private partnership, at first, they were not willing to do it, and so money couldn't flow their way. So last year, immediately thereafter, I think WADA chose us as one of the samples that were going to test whether we are now complying with the new codes. First, they found that the analysts were mostly inexperienced, they were not trained in the new testing methodologies and protocols. Secondly, they found that the number of tests were fewer. Thirdly, they then found that normally they send a placebo. False test, and you must test and tell whether it's infected or not, or there's no team or not. The laboratory failed the first test, what I give the results. With a sample and a gain from another tournament, they send another placebo. The laboratory failed the second test. At this time, the red flags were quite high. We arranged and I was looking for them to meet the laboratory and its leadership. We discussed the matter and we agreed that the laboratory was going to give us a turnaround strategy, including the testing thing and how much money is going to be required. And that they came to Senate and University Council to pass a resolution agreeing that we will not enter the CDT to be able to support the laboratory. Needless to say that even today there is no capital resolution. There is no Senate resolution to that effect. The fortunate thing is that now we have received the turnaround strategy and the proposal for capitalization. We are agreeing with that. I've made my comment, I've said to them that they must bring back. In the meanwhile, we advise them that if WADA was to suspend you, it will take us about 2 years to come back to satisfy, because we will be starting like the fresh application. And something that normally WADA would overlook, they will now pay special attention to them. So it was best that we suspend our health while we recapitalize and we rebuild the laboratory and we sort out all the entities pertaining to it. And after months of resistance, because this proposal we entered to the laboratory last year March, after months of resistance, and only when WADA now came along and then suspended us. The university now agreed to say, okay, well, because we need the money, let's work out the framework for how we're going to work together. So we are now, unfortunately, post the act where we are working on the protocols and we want to register TPP, and we're thinking that the laboratory has had a joint boss between sports and University Council, where the University Council will appoint half the members and will appoint half members to the board, and at the board they appoint the staff, and that it becomes an independent university center, registered university, run according to the code, and we give them the money. We have already ourselves budgeted the first 20 million to give to them to provide for the equipment. It's not enough. We are testing the lottery to compare with us that they would give an additional 80 million this year, so that we do. But if you really ask me, I think it's going to take us 2 years before we get the laboratory back on track. It's not an easy process, I can assure you. And we are going to have now to capitalize it if we recalculate it halfway. After we open it for the first year and it cannot do the number of the requisite tests per year, we are doomed. We also have now, using our sheet on the drawing board, to choose from the suppression for Africa, because that way is the only way we'll ensure the number of tests that are required a year to be able to do that. So that's actually. On the issue of the safety and sports and recreation events act and the appeal board, the minister has appointed the board now. And he lastly designated two people, one as chair and one as deputy. So the latter, I think, he has already been sent or been sent to the speaker of parliament, informing him of the decision of the minister after the committee had done all the right duties and the minister was given to us. So from there, the board has been appointed. I think after the speaker confirms that he has received, then we publish the gazette. So I think that is the process where we are, but the actual board has been affected. Now, I think I covered everything, sir, unless I need something. Transformation report, Chair, I don't know what would be the best way of entering this, but in a jealousy of time, I would not want to go into great detail about how this came about and the actual scores of each and every single federation, because that's an exercise that on its own will take about 3 hours. So in order for me to cover all of this in a space of about 10 minutes, what I would do is to re-emphasize what the Transformation Charter says and where the philosophy is and why we arrived at the decision after the barometer.
I'm very sorry. I don't like this thing of doing some other thing. I forgot to tell you that I have a niche who went in shell.
Four years ago, when we adopted also on the white position to take over the administration of sports, but that there will be an effort to be accommodative, and they were given an agreement that they were at federation after unification. If the president is wise, the CEO will be left, and she's vice versa, should be careful. And you still see some federations still even practice this Atrachan competition. Rugby, the notable thing, cricket, and so on, all of them, they still practice this notion of what was agreed then. And in exchange, while federations were to commit and agree to the change and accommodate black players to play at high level and at high performance, and there was an agreement of a 50% quota in 1992. That 50% of players would be back, simply counted, it's on the field. So that was what was agreed to. Fast forward to 2011, we felt that the system was very counterproductive. First and foremost, quota didn't achieve what was required, and even the quota of 50% was not achieved by anybody in 2022. In rugby, you still had like one or two or at worst three players playing. They were nowhere near 50% of what they were doing in terms of the agreement. And even others were beginning to behave as if there was never an agreement. And that this idea of having black players playing is reverse racism. This was what was now being propounded. And the voices of those who propound to see transformation were being drowned in the national discourse around this matter. Secondly, quotas everywhere, and as they were being practiced at the time, they were being pursued purely on moral grounds, that it was morally the right thing to do to allow black players to play. But the new transformation charter and its philosophy is quite cross departure from that. At the end of our minister will be transitioning to do away with the quotas and to introduce a multi-dimensional scorecard, because right now we were measuring only purely by counting how many heads are on the field. And that was the sole measure of whether you are transforming or not. And for us, simply counting black faces on the field is not the right measure to do so. So, but there was a strong counter lobby there of those who said quotas must not be abolished for what they were first introduced for has not yet been achieved. And that was a big lobby. We, the Ministry and Department, lost the debate at the Indaba, and we had to find a creative way of bringing targets into the scorecard. So under the demographic scorecard, we had to dimension, we had to add two or three measures that simply would count how many black players. But that was not the big one for us. We had to look at the totality of the scores, having the six dimensions. Now, dimensions, chair. We have access then, we have human capacity and capability development, we have the demographic profile, we have the performance dimension, we have the contribution to government priorities, and we have good governance. These six dimensions encapsulate everything the multidimensional scorecard scores on. Now, the charter itself indicates that we need to have one day verification body, an independent watchdog that could oversee the process outside the government. And Minister, in 2012, appointed the Eminent Persons Group on Transformation in Sports, aptly named the EPG. But this is purely a transformation question. There's nothing untoward about it. In fact, the charter doesn't refer to the EPG, it refers to a transformation commission. So we have just given this transformation commission a fictional name, EPG, or Eminent Persons Group, on transformation in sports. Each work was to administer the scorecard. But first, we had to pave way for them to be able to do their job. First and foremost, what we did, we entered the voluntary phase with federations, where we amended the framework to link rewards and punishments to those schools that are arising and they transform. So the more you transform, the more you pay. The more you don't transform, the more penalties you get. So all federations by those trials find the new framework. And we agreed that the framework will be put into force in 2020. So 2013, we ran a pilot, as you may know, the EPG issued the first questionnaire and leadership based on the scorecard. And they were, all federations were questioned also. Five biggest federations, the so-called Big Five, football, rugby, cricket, netball, athletics. All of them were requested to provide data in as far as the purpose of this, first and foremost, was to pilot the system, but also importantly to establish a baseline and to know where they are in as far as transformation is concerned. So that established a solid baseline, which allowed us to then, going forward to year two, to agree with them on targets. You would recall that the minister was proposing the idea of a 50-40 as a target of the number of black players that must be afforded the opportunity to play. But federation came to us, and this point is very important, Chair, because right now, those who are opposed to transformation and this idea are saying that we are not funding the federation. The federation doesn't have enough money to do what they must achieve in as far as transformation is concerned. But when the federation engaged with us on the proposal of our NIMAC of a 50-40, and they were opposed to that, we paralyzed the system. We said to the EPG, afford the federations to tell us with the money we are giving them, and to tell us in terms of their own capacity and their own footprint and plans, what targets they are likely to achieve. And the federations went back, and they set their own targets. The targets were even in some codes we were not achieved. Because if I can tell you that a coach such as cricket comes back and says to us that no, they will, of the 24,000 schools, they would establish presence in just 80 schools. 80 years. I'm doing by their own time. And they said with the money we are giving them and with everything they have, that's where they would be. We agreed to that. We didn't say no, we accepted the 8, we said, good, give up the 80 in year one. But did they reach 80? No. And so the issue of money is a fallacy, because they said with the money available we can reach 80. This is by their own calculation. Although by our own calculation we felt that they can actually reach 2,000. But we had to accept their own calculation so that at the end of the day, we don't find about who has arrived about setting the targets or not. The targets were set by ourselves voluntarily. And they came back. Now, in terms of the audit, they then have the data sheet at the end of the period and we say, tell us what you have achieved. Again, first is self-assessment by them assessing themselves, saying to us, this is what we have got. And they then provided the data by their own initiative. They're not using targets. I mean, by their own assessment. Even before we now enter the fray and audit this, they had what they submitted to us in the leadership. You look at the original target and what they say they achieved. They had underachieved even those of the smallest targets they set for themselves. So, we even did a calculation that at the rate that some of the federations like Nepal, the targets they have set so low for themselves, like even athletics, that it will take us maybe 2 years just to achieve the target at the rate they are going. So, when this story and the narrative is told, let it not be told of a goody called government who simply bulldozing all federations to do what they don't want to do and so on. Minister offered them a chance. He said, those of you who say to us today, you do not believe in this process, you don't want to participate in it, say it to us. But then we will know, and the public will know that you are saying you don't support the transformation agenda, and that's where you are. All of them said, no, Mr. You don't even have to coerce us. You don't have to issue the regulations or anything because the Act already provides for such things. So you don't have to go there. We will do it because it's the right thing to do, as they say. now believe that it is the moral reasons are no longer enough. Now it is the strategic reasons that are key to the transformation agenda. If you consider that 84% of all under 18-year-olds are black Afghans, and if you look at the census data and the projected growth, considering purely death rate among black Africans in our country, vis-a-vis death rate and also life expectancy that has increased significantly since the democratic government took over, you now realize that that number of 84% would be sitting at a record 95% in the GST. And when you look at the death rate and death rate among the white population, from which majority of our federations are going participants and players from, it's contracting at a significant rate, the death rate, which means it's actually the white population in our country has experienced negative growth, meaning that it's shrinking. So it just makes strategic sense to note that if you are doing players from that race group alone, and that's where your focus is at, in 20 years' time, your spot will be wiped off. It isn't anything to talk about unless socially something happens and the veteran among whites increases significantly over the next coming years or whatever. But as it is, strategically, the data and the statistics do not lie. It's there for everybody to see. And when you consider that the remainder of the 84%, the 50, it isn't wiped out. There's also Indians and colors in there. So you are teaching with disaster if you do not start investing significantly in the African child. So that's just a simple, it's not a moral thing, it's a strategic thing for the survival of sport and the coach in our country. But secondly, we also know international research indicates for you that at least 45% of the population are people with latent short talent. So if you are drawing only from such a narrow pool, you are excluding so much potential talent out there. So you may never mind the Bambumas and the Ramadas of this world, because they may be located in other part of the country where you are shipped. So fast forward to that, we then assessed them, we did an audit, we verified, and we had few disputes with cricket. I think the rest of the other federations easily accepted the outcomes. We have few disputes with cricket on a few scores, but now we have overcome that. All of them, five federations, have now accepted the outcomes, with only football barely making it. Just scoring 54% of the target. So the rest got below 50% of their own self-target. So with that, and considering that the targets are set so low, because if you fail to get 50% of your own targets and 5% of the PLC check, because contact is important. You consider that there are 24,000 schools and you have set yourself a target of 80 schools. You can calculate that 80 is 1% of 24,000. And yet you are unable to even reach that specific target. So it can only speak to one thing, your own commitment to the process. And more so when the resources aren't an issue, because that issue of resources you must put aside. Yeah, if we're saying to them, you must be not 24,000, perhaps we can have a conversation about the resources, but where the resources to help me be everywhere. But that was not the point. And I think where we are today, they have now all of them accepted, they have revised their own commitments. Last Saturday, we had the marathon day with all five federations to plan with them jointly, to agree with them what remedial steps they were going to take. So in the face of our conviction that after having drew the recognition to their representations, all of them said to us they accept the outcome. So as a consequence, they didn't fail to listen to them as the promotion of administrative justice act requires. The minister then took a decision to impose a ban on bidding range of instruments or penalties we could use. But we chose this one because it was a more or less a painful one. If we have taken financial resources, the withdrawal there, rugby, cricket, to some extent football, may not see that much. But it will speak the deafness of the children level if we withdraw our money. We could have chosen that, but we chose that now it will be counterproductive. We looked at the other instruments at our disposal, where we withdraw national colors. Then I think correctly, so South Africans would have been adding us that these teams could no longer represent the country and go internationally to compete. Or we could have chosen even a much more harsher one of deregistration of the federation and withdraw recognition, in which case, long and short is that much too short. Or we could have looked at what we term political premium. Like now, officials, Standard Bank, I'm sure you are aware, Standard Bank has just announced its return after we have watched them for 4 years now, asking them to come back. Earlier, the now joint CEO of Standard Bank, Chabalala, and I mentioned that the reason why they are not embracing the committee. The reason why they were not in was primarily because they felt that sports federations were not accounting for money and there was a corrupt lot, you know, and therefore they wanted out. They withdrew from Chinese attitudes in our country. They even withdrew their support for the Standard Bank Arena where they just put in events to take place. So it was not that, even when we kept them withdrew. But now they were willing after we caught them and assured them that government would get an answer. When Momentum wanted to go back to Kenya to give their money, they contacted us and we said yes, we can guarantee their money we should. They signed the sponsorship. Now, you know, BMW and ASA has withdrawn from rugby, slight changing thing, lack of transportation. Even now, when Cricket South Africa was attempting to block the inclusion in the sponsorship agreement, that they will abide by the EPG process. The thing nearly fell off, the sponsorship, because they were not willing to have that as part of the conditions for this. But now, Chinese prevailed and everybody agreed it was included as a condition that they must abide by the peace process. So it's not going to be easy. Like I'm saying, it's getting more and more strategic. So even the private sector is concerned about the info change. And the wheels have now had when we have won over the private sector to insist on transformation to the Federation as condition for sponsorship. Previously, the minister gave that premium rigid and should be allowed really needed for people to get sponsorship without raising the matter as a precondition or a condition precedent. I think we are now at the point where the wheels have turned. We have a strategic process. We no longer argue amongst ourselves how to measure transformation. There is an agreed scorecard where all of us have a signature to it. And when we are, we think that the process has matured a lot after that. We have also returned for the first time 11 other federations. This year we'll be signing also transformation agreements with the 11, which are several of the rules of our country. Very soon, next year, we'll be issuing a barometer also on 11. So the failure to meet the package, they too will follow the same. And now we are confident we have received the data since for year two. We hope to see a slight improvement. If we do not, we will take even more harsher action because we have agreed to those exemptions. The MOA, we wrote everybody signed voluntarily to that. And we had put all our ducks in a row. When we were accused of reverse racism, we met with Freedom Front, AfriForum, and Solidarity, who were all threatening to take us to court on this. They even took us to the United Nations, and they also took us to the tribunal of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, alleging that we are interfering in sport and we are bringing discrimination in sport based on race, and which is the issues that are prohibited by the code. So we have held our intentions to defend, and we will defend all the way to the Court of Arbitration for sport in Switzerland. We are committed to this process, and we're waiting for them to lead us to court in the local contract, but we believe they would have long run if they knew they had a chance. But we also want the children as with our process, and we followed every year, we teach each and every box of the Lord to make sure that what we do is within the confines of what the Lord intends. What other secondary laws like promotion of administrative justice that requires of us. So we have done so. We are confident that all the legalities and those things we have taken. But like I said, most importantly, we are doing this because it is now strategic and to save us part of our country. This process is even more agile than it was 30 years ago. Thank you, sir.
Okay, teach. One of the members, I was having an advantage to be part of the day that the board, those who were doing digital transformation, presenting the EPG results to the minister. What interested me was allowed me to go and present the committee. I'm confirming what my EPG was saying. The emphasis in the presentation is exactly what it is started with. The emphasis on our MOU with the GK education. And DG, I'm the witness for this committee. What you're presenting is what that has been made a good job, and the recommendations that today we are confirming what was presented to the department. And also teaching, I want to congratulate this committee on everything that when we started, wanted what is reflected in the EPG because of our commitment in the transformation and our commitment on supporting what the department is saying. And members are going to do the oversight and will be weeping and will be looking at the immediately terms long and short that will see that this transformation is what is expected by the nation and the people of South Africa. By those who are giving to the members questions, classifications to the teacher, may I take your edge? Honorable Manana, Honorable Victor, Honorable Manasha, Honorable Brahman, Honorable Moshi, that honor, thank you.
I must just congratulate to the information that we're getting from the department, because what the EPG has done is what there was, it's a task that they're given, and their purpose as the EPG is to ensure the sports ministry has that access for the adequate information. This is the information that we got now, and they must also have the access. For the transformation system. So the transformation of the sports system champion must be at all levels and in all areas as it is defined by the charter. And when I look at what the EPG has done as champion, they have tried to meet the good progress towards meeting the general length. The generic plan targets in both administrative and representative teams. So I think when we get the report next time, it will balance the males and the females as well when they come next time.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity you've given us. I must start off by saying that I'll never forget the level of disappointment I had
when we were in the 120 plane, I think it was sometime last year, when cricket actually boasted that they had achieved their 2013-2014, which was to have one guy on cover in the national team. I think everybody will remember how it lasted. And they actually had that in their annual report. With that, I want to say definitely it's no question of that. I'm all for transformation. I've seen how people who are disadvantaged, you know, can so terribly underperform and actually, you know, salvage when they see those who are at an advantage excel and actually and good backs and enjoy a lifestyle around all. Having said that, then, I assume that the department looked at this either as a program which serve projects or as a project which is supposed to culminate by showing certain results at a given time, whether it's stage by stage, but ultimately saying this is the kind of sports people that want to see in South Africa after so many years. I'm not clear about that. They're supposed to vary from code to code. But the main reason, the main concern of mine, which is in the form of an inquiry, is whether any in-depth multifaceted risk assessment was done. Because when you start a project, you say this is what I want to do, this is how I want to do it, this is who is going to play this role. But every project has what underlying as well as very, very evident, you know, potential risk, you know, in it. If there were such an item in this program, can we as this committee be supplied with that risk assessment, you know, so that we know what risks were foreseen by the department even as it started this? Because I think that would be only the fairest tool, Chair, that we can use as this committee to critically comment on the performance of the codes as well as the reactive action by the department. I imagine a situation where, as one say, rather you set this target, target A. Now, if you fail after so many months or so many years, this is the punishment that we will administer. This is the second part of my content. Were they informed? What type of penalties they will suffer? I'm asking this because both the minister and our DG say that it could have been worse. So we want to see, I want to be able to say, I am not fair if I criticize the department, you know, administering this kind of fair punishment, you know, if you like, because this is what they agreed to. This is what was made clear to them, that if after so many months you think this is what, this is what you should expect. But my main point is whether a risk profile was drawn out and what, how it looks like, how played with you, to ask the department to finish up with that. Otherwise, we're going to unfairly criticize the department. And I know that I've been quite vociferous, but I have to be fair. We've got a long road to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor. I'll just start on a minor point, and I just need clarity because these figures don't seem to correlate. I'm not sure what page, but if you look at the slide with the corporate and demographic profiles, in the code CEO demographic profiles, and what can you say? It says on, and this is the study with CEO, with the CEO, that it's 100% compliance. Unless I'm reading it incorrectly, I don't think that could be the case because prior to this, Botanizer didn't have a female CEO, just a CEO. So that figure is either incorrect or it was used to refer to the question in this case it could apply. Even filling up there is also a mismatch because it doesn't indicate that under Botanizer, the female representation is 100% in terms of the presidential representation. So I don't think they just stopped there. They stopped the figures or they might be searching better, which then skews the result. But the second point I'd like to make, the one that Honorable Zuzani briefly touched on, is with regards to the teaching measures that were effected as a result of the non-compliance. The level of non-compliance is different for each of the federations. option of the punitive measure and indicate the withdrawal of the bidding rights. And I took cognizance of what the DG shared in terms of what would be the most severe option, all of that. And those are clearly articulated in the Act. But given that the level of non-compliance with the Federation is unique in every instance, what then informs a similar punitive measure across the board? And whether that was because the way it's presented is that the EPG presents the report to the minister, you know, through the research of the DG on this Sunday, I might get that process too. But now that we know the final decision, what was the level of engagement leading up to that decision? Was this the initial recommendation of the EPG through the secretariat, or the recommendation much harsher and it was scaled down at ministerial level, or vis-a-vis, so that we also understand that the level of, you know, executive leadership on this issue. And lastly, on the issue of school support, because it's also come across in the EPG report, and extensively so, more so in terms of the difficulty with, you know, getting trained teachers, especially through the coaching, or in any sense, the report finds that there hasn't actually been much headway with as a result of the fine memorandum of understanding, the previous memorandum of understanding that you referred to. So my curiosity in this instance is there was this initiative which didn't yield as much results. And I'm not being a pessimist in this regard, but we are now going for a different route, you know, taking it to happen and hoping that the regulation will then change in terms of change of action from our colleagues at the Department of Education before we face the intergovernmental issue. But given the history of the level of cooperation, how confident are we that now things will be different, despite the fact that they're taking a different avenue? Because for me, from where I'm sitting, and I know there's intergovernmental protocol where you have to exhaust all other channels before you reach the venue of the intergovernmental dispute. But my difficulty is time isn't on our side. And those rules of time have been going on, and you know, it seems one department has its priorities with regards to school sports all in line. But to the other it becomes another issue, because it also speaks to a broader issue, which is also facilitation in schools. And because the coaching is the one element, that one is easily available for special resources. But also if budgetary allocations are then realigned to the policies of school sports, then it becomes even more difficult to say that this avenue would then yield a certain result. So I mean, I just want to get the sense that are we doing this for compliance purposes to satisfy ourselves in the spirit of intergovernmental relations, that from outside we play ball and then everything else before we can go to the option of an intergovernmental issue, which would be an unpopular decision and it's often very unlikely, and I don't think there is a precedent in that regard, and something that, you know, in the spirit of intergovernmental relations would mostly be discreet. But are we doing this in order to make sure that by the time we get there, if we do get there, we have complied with all the necessary steps so that our colleagues on the other side do not accuse us of any other benchmark?
Thanks, sir. I'll try to echo my colleague's sentiments that we must have spoken to the EPG and engaged directly to find out a few things from their side. When we speak about transformation, you know, it's very often to use emotion in front of logic, and notwithstanding what us as a committee believe the right way to go in terms of transformation, you need to understand a few of our truths. And the hard truths are, in terms of ranking, let's say, for example, which is one that was, I felt was good, that continue was to get right here in the soccer as two I want to say parallel sports, because historically they've held images, whether it's spoken or not, they've held certain polarizing images. And I think if you look at the Googles, for example, cutting this to this poor list. Now, they can only take in so much as a union. Now, from our side as governments, we need to be saying, what can we be doing to facilitate more participation? And what I wanted to engage with the EPG about was how much accountability to be placed on the union side and how much accountability to be placed on the government side for government to ensure service delivery, to ensure transformation. And why I'm getting this is because, again, last year we had SORU come here. SORU gave us the transformation policy. I just felt it was a lazy policy. I thought they'd cover our numbers. And I think at the end of the day, we said that as a committee, we support that policy. The minister said he supports that policy. He supports their strategic document. They come back to us a year later and they say, here's our documents. We've achieved around 80% of our KPIs. Now, when you come and sit here and say, SRSA has achieved 80%, to get everyone going, hey, you're well done, and high clips and high fives. But when SORU comes and says they've achieved 80%, we say, no. But, you guys must go and do more, you must go back, you must do X, Y, and Z. Now, here's a good case in point, and again, my colleague has said, it can't be a one-size-fits-all approach. You know, if Apple's done it this way and Rugby's done it this way, somewhere along the line, we need to be careful on how we, on the not one punishment for principle, as you say, you take away money, cricket and rugby might survive, but Athletic South Africa, that will be there, but Athletic South Africa, so we've got to be responsible in that way. But now we've got a sanction. And I want us to be clear. Government must be clear on transformation. It must be serious about transformation. And I don't think anyone in this group doesn't want transformation. That's clear. But we must apportion, as I was hoping the EPG could do that, is apportion projects to the unions and projects to governments. So governments, in order for the union to be successful, you need to do this. In order for the union to be be successful, government has to do this. And for instance, if you look at what the Lions are doing in Jabulani with the 3 rugby fields, great, R1 million spent on building 3 rugby fields. But what do you do around it? And who's responsible for ensuring that the people are coming right now? I'm going to tell you this right now. To stop bidding for a World Cup rugby, and I'll say this, you know, the minister says to me, yeah, but you say no to the Commonwealth, but you say yes to the World Cup rugby. The World Cup rugby, the stadiums are here. Everything is in place. All that is, the infrastructure is in place. What it can do is bring tourism and bring jobs. Jobs being the most important thing is that we must make a punishment that punishes the people and lets the government and the unions off the hook. We must find punishment that punishes the guilty parties, whether it is government, whether it is the unions, whatever it is. We must be more specific on that. So I do believe that there should be some sanctions of some sort. I do believe that we've gone about transformation in a 21 years down the line. We can't say we've really achieved much. But somewhere along the line, as I say, we must try and get the minister to, just on that point, just on the hosting of international events such as the World Cup, that we find another sanction to that will not punish people, but will punish the guilty parties.
No, thank you for this, and quickly just, it's not sufficient for some of us who grew up under apartheid, would tell you how certain things are, biting when the But despite the, you know, the fraternity's failed to meet its target, its quota. And what are we saying? That are we then saying that we should blame someone else when people cannot meet, when they fail to comply of their own standards and targets? I need something needs to be done about this. But just in my question is I just want to check with the DC as to, you know, their response as the Federation after the minister made the announcement. How did they respond? You know, because I know at least for rugby, I'm not sure how it went on after that, but they immediately indicated that they will continue to bid for the U23, you know, host and World Cup host. I'm not sure how it went, but I just want to check with the DC as to how they responded, because if that's the case, then it also shows a level of acceptance and loving the person. I love the part that he, when, you know, he puts, you know, the scientific part of it, he explains it much better. And the last interesting to you to ask the DC to convey our appreciation and congratulate
Okay, I think we'll see a couple of times, because you see this thing of transformation. If we are not going to move as people that are responsible, if we are going to be the ones that want to give excuses, then we face pressure from outside. Because that pressure is beginning to come. In Kosatu was quite so and so. So the other thing is that it's not as if somebody is punishing the four generations. It's the process that has been started by her, you know, when they agreed to have a transformation commission in 2011, and the government ensuring that is implemented. And these targets, the promise, it is something that have been agreed to between themselves and the minister. It is not as if somebody imposed this. It is something that they went through. So it's important, because even the punishment, various measures of punishment, they knew, all the federations knew that these are the measures that the minister can take, and this is the lesson of the punishment, punitive measure that the minister is given. So I think let's allow this body, because we should understand that this is the process that the department, the federations are involved in. That is why there's been a meeting. So let's allow them to self-correct. And we must put pressure that they must meet the targets on the basis, and that is what they said they need. You see, that is how we should react. And hope that they find a solution on the basis of what we have agreed, that it must be something that can solve to deal with the pressure that we have. Because we've got pressure, and the ANC in particular, we've got a tremendous pressure that we have not moved on transformation 20 years down the line. We have not moved. And I mean, at the moment, this is the best possible way. way forward. That has got a writing from all generations. It has got a writing from all generations. If we fight, the minister exercises his rights, we don't support the minister. When are we going to ensure that we exercise, the minister exercises his rights with the other level that must be signed with the minister? It means we won't move on this question. We won't move. Because I mean the minister has exercised the lesser punishment. And we are not easy. We are not easy. Because one thing that we should not forget is that the playing field is not level. The playing field is not level. And that is why I even understand why we can't put money as we should into the sport department. Because the playing field is not level. That is why we can't take all the money and put it here and cover the 10 million that the plan to solve the plan, to implement the plan, SRE 2011 requires. We understand why we can't put 10 billion, all of them. Because of this apartheid policy that was implemented by people that wanted to ensure that certain sections of society must not benefit. And the thing is not, it's not, it's not equal. That is why. That is why, I mean, you go to the schools. The schools, when you go to the townships, it's depressing. There are no, even the field, the ground there, are really needed. Come 1994, we ended up eliminating mostly from some of the schools, building houses there, because of the pressure, because of the problems of our state. Now what must be done? What is to be done here? What is to be done? But must we end up saying, no, we understand. When are we going to reach 74 federations? That's not supporting. That's supporting, right? I think last time we ended up supporting more federations. I think by about 4, from 60 to about 64. And all of those federations were not touched. So far we've only touched 5. 7, they are still to decide. They are still to decide. I think we decide. It means they refuse to decide. Because even the committee that is supposed to put pressure is rational, is trying to understand that no, don't sign. Because my take is that we must be the ones that put pressure before the committee out there, the unions, before the youth. Because you can see, the youth, they are even more forthright than us. That is why the country is burning. It's burning because the youth is impatient. When something happened, I mean, there were sittings or some protests in some of the offices here in Western Cape, Cocoa Newlands. It happened. You see? So my take is that let's support the work that is being done by the Commission. Let's support it. If the minister has used his minimum cognitive measure, let's support that and see. Let them comply. And the minister, this minister is informed by where he comes from. It is the ANC that ensures that we are now back into the international fold. Even now, it means there is no way that the minister can deliberately sabotage the need that must host and create more jobs. You know what has happened in terms of the three areas mentioned, hosting opportunities that we have in terms of Africa Cup, cricket. We know what that brings.
so on and so forth. But I think because here we are dealing with what they have committed to doing, let's support that way. And not that side, because once we can be seen to be not sure where we want to support them in it, I'm telling you, we won't have even 11 federations that have not even signed. They won't sign because they say if the five federations that are farmers and that are natural resources, the minister is punishing them, why must we sign? It means this thing, we are saying it must go down, down with EPG. That is what we are saying. About four pages in that document that are dedicated
the respect are there because it's both ways and they cut both ways. And, in any process, you will not find the downside. There's always a downside. But you must weigh the downside vis-à-vis the benefit. And where the benefit outweigh by far the downside, you implement. And even in medical science, they do the same thing. The doctors give the patients a toxic nature of the drugs and everything called chemotherapy, with the hope that they kill the cells of cancer before they kill you. So, delivering poisoning and radiation in your body. But it's a better thing because the cost of not doing it is even more severe. So I think that is the whole point about it. But yes, the other years, we did that in that study. And that can call, by the way, we also tabled it with commissioners. So I can share a copy with the Honorable Sultan so that he can revisit it and look at it and see what we highlighted, the key challenges. And in the transformation charter itself, speaks about the risks of the process in both ways. So whether it, what potential impact the process will have on the federations, and it also speaks about what potential impact there would be if we not undertake the process. So, and it has to be always looked from both sides. The risk of not undertaking the process must also be taken seriously in this regard. Even when we apply to the measures, we have to consider the potential risks of the idea. We also consider that globally, South Africa is not only seen as a premium destination for hosting mega events and all of that, which is what we enjoy now. In 2012, at Doha, we received the accolades and the award of being the best sport tourism destination in the world. So all of this has to be weighed during the process and not doing it, and what you are potentially could risk and what you could lose from that point of view. Which are some of the elements Honorable Bergman brings to the fore. Why do we behave as it's one such system on and we give the same energy for similar things, for differentiated results that we receive? Look, we only have a few instruments in the law. And those are the ones that are actually in the law. If we become too creative and we start looking at alternative instruments that the minister is not empowered in terms of the law to undertake, then on review or in a court of law, we will be found wanting. So we can only stick with what we have. And right now, in the array of our instrument and in our arsenal, lies just the five measures that I've added to. So you can choose that perhaps cricket, no, and even worse, athletics that performs even better than the other four coaches, that perhaps we should have punished them more than the ones who were very close, because I can assure you, cricket and rugby were quite close to the 50% mark. Let's not make a mistake about it. They were quite close to the 50% mark of what we agreed with them. Now, I need to put this in context, Honorable Bergman, because what the federation, in terms of their own allotted plans, which they at their board level assigned to, they will tell the way they measure themselves and the way they do all this is very different across all federations. That's why they will come to CG and tell you that no MIT is taking a number of KPIs on transformation. It may be commendable by their own standards. But we have a uniform standard and approved now legal instrument in the scorecard. So how you rank yourself internally as a federation is neither here nor there. What matters the most is how you fare in terms of what you stand up to with the APT. Period. This is as simple as that. So in terms of our measure, the things we look at, whether you have transformed or not, you have fed below 50%. You are not at 80. And that for us is seen. And they know it. And which answers the question, what is it that they say in response once we enforce them? Like I said, therefore, admitted immediately that yes, the status is as is and they compare. Only cricket wanted to argue a few relevant points, and we exchanged notes. They gave us what they thought they should have been measured on and how, and we showed them how we measure them, and they wanted to measure them such naturally on the scorecard, and we showed them that there are different weights. Let me give you an example. The weight on access is much more easy than the weight on contribution of government priorities. Like whether you give a recycling, who's going to talk to school children on how to wash hands, or be an ambassador for oral hygiene or whatever. All those, yes, they are there, they are nice to have. They are important, they must be done by them to contribute to society as role models and so on. But could that really weigh enough for the shame as access, as the ability to open up your spot to more people to really need? So obviously access and demographics must weigh more easier than the other dimensions. And it is only when we showed them how we calculate this that finally they accept the outcome. So where we are, their response all five is to accept the outcome of the process and the result. That is to, they have now committed themselves and they have been submitting, and they have, most of them on Saturday, they have submitted the their revised targets and measures, which they say they will undertake to meet what was there before and to meet also their coming years targets. So, which brings me also to the issues raised by Honorable Malachi. Yes, Honorable Malachi, on your issue of code CEO, the demographic profile there, you are correct. That was an error, it was a swap. But if you look on page 45 of the entire report, although the graph shows it just as well, but if you read the narrative is correct, it speaks to the right information. So it provides it now in the proper context. On the issue of is governance failing in school sports, therefore this has recognized as a connection with failure of federation to meet their own targets. Like I said, you know, when I presented it, honestly, we have stressed to federation that set your own targets according to the money and the capacity you have. So if you knew you could change it, could change it. Don't put dependencies on government in that regard. Is there a bigger role for government to play in constructing the transformation process? Yes, there is. Obviously, let me put it to you this way. If it can reach the 80 schools, they would have learned their site, which would have meant that they would have avoided a potential penalty. But on that scale, that then it means that cricket is transformed. Not necessarily. But this is a gene. Transformation is a process, it's not an event. So it is for that reason, although it must be repeated, it is for that reason that, yes, if we and basic education as government were to do what is required, schools were placed normally and we were to be properly capacitated and funded, and the sports then was to be fully funded, the process will happen much more efficiently than at the pace that it is going now. But right now the targets are set on the basis of realistic consideration that there is no money, there is no capacity. So, however, we insist that for the available capacity and the available money, the targets must be met. So I think that's where much current the two. In this regard. Are we shifting government responsibilities to national federations? Not necessarily. Sport is to be run by national federations, and even though the chance of saying so. Our job as government is to be a catalyst and a supporter. We are already funding this federation. Trust me, we are already ring-fencing money for school sport for them. So all we are asking is that with the money we give them, specifically for school sport, they must be in those schools. And this is where our contrast is, that they are in those schools which they have the money to be in. This is our issue. Cricket has given us its revised strategy and every other thing, and they presented it in the closer today. We accept what they have said, and we told them right away that we agree with what they are proposing now, because now what they are proposing compared to what they contend themselves last time looks a bit more realistic. They have also said to us that on some targets, they want to negotiate us to revise them downwards. We said to them, we will welcome that conversation. They must go on and engage the EPG on it. Equally, they must be willing, considering the recommendations of the EPG, that on some targets, those targets must be revised upward. So there's going to be this conversation between Clinton and them. What we also welcome, I can tell you, that we have the data system, by the way. And for that, this time around, they will be much more clear to say this specific program, this specific one, we want to increase it by 1,000 schools now and so on. Can you, they call it the Team for Rugby program, can you at least fund us for this? And then we said, yes, let's look at a different conversation, which we will have. Is that you really was out of the country coming back? As soon as she's led, we're going to meet him and Nathan Green, we're going to sit, discuss the specific target at support for them to turn the areas where they underperformed on to bring funding to those specific areas. And that conversation is healthy and is going ahead. And we were more heartened by the fact that rugby almost makes 50% incidents, but they do understand what Honorable Barrowman is doing. The board is not in government, so it's in their court. The board is in their court. If they come next year, they meet their records. We will lift the ban. This is as simple as that. We understand when we announced the ban on beating to three, all the tournaments that were already awarded prior to the ban will be free to proceed. We will not put them into plunge them into crisis. Things like the HBSC 7 tournament in December, they are free to proceed. The African Athletics Championship that was awarded 2 years ago for Devon to host now, Athletics is free to proceed. But can Athletics now go on and do what it is intending to do, to be for the IWA and the Olympic? No, they can't do that. Equally, can rugby go on to be for the Rugby World Cup without them missing their target? No, they won't. We will not agree and we will not support that and it will not be approved. So, as simple as that is, meet your target, we will review. And if you meet them, you will be free, we will support you, but meet the target. So, and they have committed themselves that they will be the target. They have said to us that we must allow them to proceed, declare their intention to be a candidate, but the being process is the document must only be lost next year. So they've got time, in all fairness. They've got time, and if they do meet the targets and they do what they say they are going to do, and we are going to support them. Our intentions are not to celebrate when they fail to meet the targets, because that kind of production. We have to help them, and that's why this conversation is so important, to help them to achieve those targets. Could we have given opportunity for listeners? No, Honorable Bergman, we can't. I think, like I said, we can only apply what is in the law. Unless we amend the law, we have new penalties, like we may remove the executive for this, or we may remove a CEO or transformation manager and so on. For being, all of that, I think, perhaps in future, should we amend the law, we can add those other alternative remedies. But right now, we must be by the law, and I think that's what we serve as well. And unfortunately, in the law, the most legal penalty is only this one. I have outlined what the implications for the other penalties are. So, this was the least we could do to be there. And I think that's why we were there. Lastly, I was requested to pass on the congratulation note to Mr. Lezaga, who had been appointed as CEO of Boxing in South Africa. I will do so. Thanks.
Let's just start with, for example, because it's
close to being Pakistani, which means that, that at the next submission of the report, for instance, they still don't, in fact, they comply. And that is within the period in which they can be, and you know, they launch the formal reading which it goes through. At the subsequent period of the reporting, there is a regression, right? And the reading has submission. What has happened is one might presume that government then say, hey, withdraw that given your faith is not comply. And secondly, on the issue of target setting, you know, because, and I understand this is, you know, to a lesser degree, a trial and error, because one result comes, the other get ways that we can improve each other. But does that mean that going forward, the targets will now be negotiated to come to a point where both of the departments are going to be satisfied that these are the realistic targets that the department is confident about, taking into consideration what the department's priorities are. Because I, for one, you know, think that an AG, the number of AG for teacher schools, you know, can argue that it is useful given the need to have access in this particular community schools. I mean, I think that going forward, there will be, you know, a host training process to say that in terms of government priorities, but also your need to have access to the sport, this is what we think the targets are. And I understand, you know, the issues of relations to, you set your own targets, we can then, you know, have even a bigger thing to hit you with because you set your own targets, and if you are not reaching those targets, then, well, you know, you gotta account for your own actions. But also to get the sense in terms of, because, I mean, I then prepared, for instance, you know, and there's often an issue with, you know, submission of documents and our own standards. And I, for one, am not satisfied with that question. Now, one is because you have much more frequent interaction with these observations. And I think this is where also it's important, it would have been also helpful for I as a member, for instance, that the EPG also, there's no issue of the level of engagement they have with these observations. Is it an attitudinal thing when it comes to the degree of accountability? Because, you know, when one reads the entire report, it's very expansive in terms of the details that it wants. Even to an extent that, you know, if I put myself on the other side sheet, the amount of information that is required, I mean, it's very basic. You presume that each and every federation would have it, but, you know, in a larger sense, that information is not there. So one of the things is that when the EPG submits the questionnaire, there is a scramble in these federations, in some of these federations, without getting everyone in the same batch, to get the information to comply. I want to establish whether, I mean, is there an issue with, you know, attitude, and I'm not looking for gossip here, but is there an issue with the attitude of the leadership in terms of, you know, frequently accounting to this body instead so that the information is correct? Because when you also go down into it, you find that, and it's highlighted in the report, you know, the number of provincial governments, for instance, that supply information, it's two provinces that do so in terms of this report. Then, you know, you contradict that with the number of sports councils that are in existence. It's also useful. But you go to provinces when we do oversight, you find, you know, this leadership, whether self-elected or anointed, but you find personalities that are there. But when it comes to reporting, there are ghosts because this information is not there. So the validity of information in any project, you know, visualizes in terms of better intervention can happen. But when that supply of information is, you know, and I don't want to be a pessimist again and argue that it's deliberately being withheld or not reported accurately, but it gives a huge picture of the reality of the situation. From the report itself, it's very worrying in terms of the lack of quality and accurately verifiable information that comes through this. And I just want to get a sense in terms of, for the department, because unfortunately you have the burden of take ownership for the project, and like if you have problem children, you know, the burden lies on the parent when, you know, your neighbors come and complain about the behavior of your children. So in this instance, what I want to get is, what are the measures we take? Because this is not a one-off project. It's going to roll for a time until we get to a period where we are satisfied to just have mechanisms of managing. Thank you.
I also
to make a wish whether we can speak for this or we can add some time that we must get originally a document. Because I'm suspecting something that your report is not talking everything, but it summarizes a good lesson. So I'll plead to honorable members that they must leave the last question to DC. I'm sure members are raising their hands. I know one, even myself, I don't want to hold it. I want to teach to answer all of my life, because we don't have enough time. That's why I'm pleading that this document must be there. And no follow-ups after DC. We must get to the last point. Which do you say?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Malati. Yeah. The issue that is, I think it's important, but each of the federations and the measures we take on them, each case has on its own merit. And even when we do give approvals, even for people to be or to host, often we give those approvals subject to certain conditions and whether they meet those conditions or not. And I think we will consider the nature of the tournament, how long it takes to finalize the awarding of the rights, all those things into account when we try. But we have made a commitment to say that this must for a year, the ban is for a year, subject to review after we release another report. So when that report comes out, if you have met your targets, we're likely to uplift the ban and you may eat. But when you do it, who knows that the leading house regulations empower us to support or approve subject to certain conditions. And this we always attach. So we will see as and when. And I can assure you, because building and hosting is also one of the instruments we use as a corrective measure, and as we see in this case, we will also in future link building with all of these things. Because already, the regulations are already saying that if you are a federation but doesn't account for money, you are not in good spending, or you are under administration or otherwise, you cannot be supported to teach. Already those conditions are there. So it's a question of any new ones to say, if you are not transforming, then we don't support you. It's a simple statement. I think that's the issue. And we may say, subject to you meeting the targets for the next 3 cycles before you host. I think that's because we're only talking, I think that's supposed to happen in 2023. So I think that's where the issue is. So that we will come to that. I guess we'll cross the bridge when we come to it next year. It may be too early to determine what the future would be like and what we are likely to say at that point. But we want to bring certain things to the process by, we have made a commitment of AI. We will stick by that subject to review. And the review process is what will be taken. Secondly, is there vigilance on the part of federations to do this thing? Well, this far we have no reason to say that there is. All of them have voluntarily committed to this process. All of them, when they meet with us, they say they are very committed to it. Even their public pronouncements follow the same thing. All we want is that commitment be demonstrated to, not just in words, but also in deeds. So that's where we would then have to focus our attention on and to look at that specific role that they will play in as well as getting agreed targets to implement it. This federation is visually just a punitive measure, no, not necessarily. We think that it's also corrective because in any system where you don't really dangle the carrot, then it's not a good system if you only will the seed. So the two must go together. And where we are sitting, we have already dangled the carrot to say that there are rewards for those who perform and who behave well. So then they get more applications and they get more support and every other thing. Are we going to now have a host rate arrangement over 5-30? Apparently, no. We will engage with the federation team. We will tell them what we think we can achieve. And in return, they need to consider what we think is achievable with the money we give them. But in return, they must also have the skills that they will target. I think we're not going to remove that thing from them and start imposing, because once we start imposing targets, people have every reason to say, no, the reason we have not achieved is that you give us too much, you know, and we're expecting too much out of us. And I think we will never agree on methodology about how to go about things. Let me give an example. Cricket says that their basic rollout plan to reach schools, on average, they say they need about 350,000 per school. But as you may know, Jerry Kirsten, former cricket player, runs like the Kirsten Foundation, which we are meeting them after this portfolio committee and Kipta. But they run at a fraction of the cost, at about 50,000 per school. They roll out the same thing. So if they can, and we build them and we reinforce them, because I can tell you now, Cricket South Africa doesn't know it yet, but I can tell the committee what our intentions are. So I agree with the Irrigation Foundation, ring fence the money, and we give it to Cricket South Africa on the provision that support that foundation to run out their safety. So that's our plan, because we think that the reach will be much more great than it is. So it's not like we aren't helping the region. We will where we think it can work, and we will partner with them, we will support them, we will give work, and we will also dangle money to say, all right, we hear you, your target is to do 100 schools, but we think that you must also be in this 50 schools. Tell us what it will cost you to be in those 50. And then we go there and teach everything and say, okay, here's a grant for the additional 50. Achieve what you said, but also achieve this 50 for us. Are you able to do so? They say, yes, it's part of our agreement with that. But we do not wish to start the degree. There's nothing stopping us. The law is clear that says that they prescribe, but we're not going to be that prescriptive. I think it's a give and take situation, and we're still in the phase we call a voluntary phase, where we are saying people must just abstain. We don't want them to be coerced in it, because we may do it as a coercive process, and the law allows for that. But we think that we get better results for people when we do this, and believing in it, not because they are required by government to do it. I think that's the answer, Chair.
Zones, and our
was only a zone 6 and then also the Scatra zone 6. And we had to then amend ourselves and align ourselves to the new AU missionary. At Camps 4, Camps being the Committee of African Ministers of Sport, South Africa was tasked with the responsibility of writing up the new governance machinery of the AU sports ministry. And we engaged with SCASA, but it appeared that the leadership of SCASA at the time, particularly Director General Shelston Kashima, was not ready for the aid office, and they had stalled the process of realignment in that regard until we sent the resolution to CAMS 5 in Abidjan. And CAMS 5 then took a decision and clarified its original position and resolution of CAMS 4 to say that the CASA must dissolve in full, and in its place, a new continental body is being put forth. In order to win the Francophone African countries over, we have to give a give and take and agree that Cameroon will be the host seat of the new AU Sports Council. So the AU Sports Council was established, and we were told that all the regions of Africa will have to be followed in that way. The AU itself says it has 5 regions, the 4 on the continent, and the 5th one being the African diaspora. Now, with that, the regional machinery was only to have 4 of the 5 regions, those on the continent. And SADC essentially became region 5. So we are region 5 of the AU Sports Council, and we are the most active region in effect. We are the only region that still has regional games. We have now added one more to our portfolio of the regional sport awards. We also are running a podium performance program for the whole region and the exchange programs around coaches. So with it, South Africa has been quite instrumental. Ever since the establishment, South Africa has been leading as the Secretary General. In this body, like in the AU itself, the Secretary General is more important than the President, was more powerful in terms of roles and responsibilities. And South Africa has been that. The late Mboso Mbele has been representing us in the SCASA zone 6 and now AU region 5. Now, after he passed away, there is a process now of finding a new secretary. We have been nominated once again by 5 of the countries in the region. And the people of Botswana, who have always contested us, have been forever losing against us, and have now nicely come to ask us not to have a candidate, and that they are even advocating to have the post of Secretary General. And some of them have been playing the tactics of studying the resources to the region, which have forced us to make various extra payments to the region to sustain the efforts. The offices of the region are still in Botswana and Cameroon, where SADC is, and we have finalized the constitution of the region of the AU. We have been requested by the AU Sports Council and the General Assembly that the constitution of the region will be used to model the constitution of the continent as a whole. So, which speaks to show the work that we are doing. We also, through the diplomatic office in DECO and our mission in Addis Ababa, had also began to issue letters to all countries of Africa to collect all money outstanding on behalf of SCASA in the world, and which will now go into this. The work of still transferring assets from the old SCASA to the new one is happening. So, Chair, we are proud to announce that the first regional sport award will take place in Johannesburg in Beirut in August. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry, Chair. I've just been corrected. So it will be in August. Then in Johannesburg. And we, importantly, this year again in September, the regional youth games under the team are taking place and are being hosted by Angola, and they will be in Rwanda. And again, our staff members, in fact, now we have to replace Ms. Valeraga because he has been sitting in two provincial committees together with the CEO of our department, driving the support, because clearly Angola has no capacity to host the games, and we have been requested to intervene. And the Minister of Angola came to visit to meet our minister to request additional hosting support. We will have to go to the Ferrari as well as cabinet in order for us to facilitate that. They are asking for playing equipment and every other thing, and it's like South Africa is hosting. We did the same thing with Mozambique, as you know. We hosted the All Africa Games in Mozambique. We also hosted the European Games in Lesotho. As you know, we always are very supportive. Without us, the region will collapse. This is as simple as that. But for the development of athletes in the region, we are quite committed to the process and to our mission. No, I was one of the chair. I think I've been misled. The awards are actually in 2015, not August. We are in 2016. So that's the story about the AU and the programs it runs, four key programs now, and that's what we're focused on, podium performance, regional sport awards, the new games, as well as coach exchange program. That's where we are. And the first, okay, in coach exchange as well as podium performance program, we include, as you will know, we are supporting the high altitude training center in the highlands of Lesotho at Harapokolon. In Lesotho, we have established an academy there with the government of Lesotho as part of the agreement we signed. So our long distance runners who run marathons and all that will be their training camp. Quite very high, I think it's 1,832 seats above mean sea level. So there the air is very thin, so if you can run faster times there, when you are in Boston at about 215 feet above sea level, then you are home and dry. You will be able to beat everybody. And that's the secret why the Lesotho athletes have always been dominating our ultra marathons, is because they train at higher altitudes. So now we have, with South African money, we have been able to open it up for the whole region and facilities and all that. So last year we gave them a grant, as you may be aware, for them to buy gym equipment and all of that. Now we are giving them an operational grant for the first time to run the center. So the center will be open first for South African and Lesotho athletes. In order to commemorate that, we are looking at what we call the Two Nations Marathon, where every year, more like the Comrades, athletes will run from South Africa in where is that place? Maseru and Lake Branch. Lake Branch, I'm sorry. So it will run from Maseru to Lake Branch 1 year. Going that way, the other year going that way. So each year you alternate in that way. So that's actually the UNESCO first for us. In terms of UNESCO, Chair, maybe let me start by characterizing this. South Africa, we have a problem with how health sport is being governed. And I think we are fighting very hard in our work in the international arena to harmonize coordination of world sports globally. And that's why governments have become so weak and federations have become so powerful. That's because global sport governance is not run well. Ultimately, resolutions of various sport groups operating in the world feed into the United Nations General Assembly. As you may know, since 1952, about 172 resolutions have been taken on sport, recreation, and physical education. So all these resolutions, we did a track of them in our international relations region to see what percentage of these have been fully achieved and equally. How often do bodies report back to the UN General Assembly on the achievements of this and lack thereof, and whether the Assembly itself corrects the implementation of its own resolutions. But it is because sport administration in the world has a plethora of bodies that don't seem to be talking to each other. Let me give you an example. The region, there has been five or much of a body where all ministers of sport in the world meet every 4 years. So every meeting session has met 5 times. So we should think about 20 years again. So next year in Kazan, Russia, Netflix will be teaching. And we were looking at the, how far have we implemented the resolutions of Minas Rights, and whether those resolutions have found their way into the United Nations body, and particularly into the General Assembly. And we have found that no, they have not. But some of the resolutions were correspondent to the General Assembly via, for instance, bodies like the UN Office on Sport for Peace and Development, and also we South Africa are a chair of the International Working Group on Sport for Peace and Development. And Dr. Farah Spain is the secretary, and our deputy minister is the president of that body. This body only has 56 of the world countries sitting on it, pursuing sport, and some of its agenda, because of our chairmanship, we have taken the resolutions of Minas Rights and we have turned them into the UN system for funding. We are also concerned that this UN body, the bulk of their money and their expenditure is in Europe as well as North America. But very little goes to Asia, Africa, and South Africa, where the resources are required the most. And in fact, even research grants and every other thing are all over the place. Where they needed the most, and are wishing for them. So we have taken a conscious decision after we were elected in Paris 2 years ago as the chair of the UN Conference of Parties on Sport and Recreation, where presumably all countries of the UN must be represented on the Conference of Parties. But as we know, right now the participation levels are about 72 countries who are entering participate. And not much work was done by the UN to establish an office, but we make sure that the charter is signed up to. First and foremost, the charter on the Sport for Peace and Development was literally non-existent. We took our own sports club model, did and modeled the charter. We sponsored it to Africa. Africa agreed to this, and then finally we sponsored it to the UN Office for Sports for Peace and Development, and that was approved and adopted as our charter. It has now been sent into the UN system and we have its endorsement by the UN General Assembly. So, equally, we are now the chair of CIGES, CIGES being the Intergovernmental Committee of UNESCO, which is responsible for physical quality, physical education provision. And to that extent, because of our chairmanship of that body, we have also, because it is a UN body, UNESCO looks at science, culture, organisms, but sport is one of their systems. And in sports, they have broken it down into two parts. And you then have three that looks specifically at physical education. We chair that as well, and we also chair the Africa Committee of CIGES. And we have been using CIGES because of the number of influential countries. And I think the reason why most influential countries and powerful countries in sports, like Australia, UK, Canada, all of them participate strongly in CIGES, is primarily because CIGES is grants. And that's why you find a lot of that side, and you don't find them in the Sport for Peace and Development and of the other international working groups. So we believe that we must do away, chair with many of these bodies, create only the UN Conference of Parties on Sport and Recreation that will fit into directly the General Assembly, and underneath it, it will have an office and an executive elected, and every 4 years, it consult with MINES, which is the body of ministers of sport right across the world. So that's the configuration we want, that we want also continental committees of ministers of sport, like in our case, camps, to be a direct fit into MINES, and that only resolutions from that from continental bodies can serve on the agenda of MINES, and then MINES can feed into the Conference of Parties, which then can table resolutions in the General Assembly. Problem is that right now, anybody can go to the General Assembly and sponsor a resolution on sport and push it. And there's not tracking, no effort, no anything. In this quest, we are supported by a few countries. So we have now requested the AU Sports Council to convene a special meeting of camps, because we have camps to 2 years ago. So effective class are prepared in 2 years later, and problem is that the nurse is coming up. We're also going to have accepted by the Committee of African Ministers of Sport and other bodies who are looking at across the world to do away with this. Obviously people like Mr. Kiki Lemke, who now chairs the another body of the UN, the office, they don't mind what South Africa is proposing, because I guess after we do the configurations, some people may not have been in the offices, but they will now. So because of that, there is some degree of opposition, but I think our country, in as far as sport and recreation is concerned, globally, is held in high regards as far as leadership and what we do. So from that point of view, it is for that reason that when Argentina attempted to stand against us on the chairmanship of the Conference of Parties, that as quickly as the nominations were submitted, they had to withdraw immediately, because it was just overwhelming support. I think of the 72 countries who were supported by 59, including countries which were Argentina elections. So I think we have done extremely well. While we are still in the position of influence, we want to now clear the landscape for well sport and its configuration right through to the end. And that will be the biggest part of our work in the next 4 years in this regard. So I think that's the story, Chair, in short, because I've not gone into the detail. In the presentation, we show you some of the key resolutions the NATS have taken, and also some of the key resolutions on decisions and what we have been doing. I've only summarized the data that we have done in as far as that is concerned, but in the jealousy of time, I've not done the presentation in full, but I've given you the main shape of what Westport looks like and what we want to do, and using our current leadership in many of the world bodies that are fragmented to bring them together and have one issue that has been globally. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ, for helping about this information. It is just one of us used to serve in short abstractions. Without short Africa, sometimes we feel that even the conference may not be fruitful. And I'm proud that even now, for the first time that we're getting this report, that even in sport, South Africa is giving the way. That's the South African government. And I'm quite sure now that the progress that we've done since the inception of democratic government, South Africa, you can go to ITU if you want to search there. You can go to another source. You find that the progress that you are in it, we are proud of it. And these countries that are talking about until today, they are not recognizing the South African government in the way that we are doing things. So we always say that we are proud. Can I take it? Any comments, any questions, I beg.
Let me welcome this presentation, because I understand that if OUSC, it's not for the first time around the world. There are some worlds that other countries, I mean, that already started long ago about the African Union Sports Council. And I just want to check who will be championing this African Union Sports Council? It is on five. And if there will no financial implication in our ever say thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you. Now the each region pay affiliation fees, and each region will pay for its own configuration. The continental body will collect 15% of the affiliation fees from the regional structures, which is supposed to fund the continental body in portion. That is supposed to reach 40%, and then the AU itself, secretariat or commission, pays the other beverages the 50% of the funding in that way to drive us. Currently, the leadership of KEMS is with Ivory Coast, so the Minister of Sport of Ivory Coast is the chair of the Committee of Markets and Ministers of Sport. They are the ones who are supposed to drive the continental alignment process. But as I've already indicated to the committee, I think right now all of them are waiting for hours to finish our constitutional review process and alignment with the AU. Once our constitution for the region has been finalized, all other regional constitutions will be modeled on what South Africa is doing and doing, and ultimately be modeled into a constitution of the continent. So all of that process is like that. We have been requested to bid for hosting of the campsites, and we have declined to host that because of the huge cost, I must let you know. For hosting the All African Ministers of Sport is not a child's play, it's a lot of money. So it's also a serious direction because of protocol issues. What we are going to have to work flat out for about 9 months straight to prepare properly for them. So we have declined. It appears that the other countries like Senegal have stepped forward to say that they would host. So we will await who tells us. But now that we were the ones who propounded that we want a special cash meeting, we were told that then we must be prepared to host the CAM6 meeting. But in return, we have engaged the AU Commission to ask that the meeting be aligned with the General Assembly. So the next time head of state are going to Addis Ababa, they must be accompanied by their ministers of sports. And after their session, we will have our session, or prior to the session of the heads of state and government, we will have a session of the ministers of sport. That way, it will force each and every country to pay for their own ministers. And that's our current proposal to add this burden of having to host scholarships. So I think that's where we are with the process, but Ivory Coast is taking the lead together with the AU Commission to drive the process, but every region pays for themselves, and every country in the region has to pay affiliation fees.
That's the only problem that has been taking that much. They do enjoy the contribution and of South Africa, even in SADC. The listing of the affiliation fee, when it comes to South Africa, you always ask that South Africa must pay more. And because it's about the agreement, those who have been here, sometimes we don't get these reports of this agreement, and we find us wanting, even in SADC, every now and then it's South African government that they will ask, they must host, or even if it hosts not with us, but they will ask the commission that we must top up the funding. So as this committee, we want to do our own oversight when we want you to respond to us, in order that we must know what is it going on. I'm suspecting when we wrote this letter as a committee, we wanted to get to know if we have a leading in this, let's call it CAPSA, we must know what it is on. But as I was saying, I'm sure that in all these structures, South Africa is the key region which is doing well, and they know the recognize until today. With those words, it was a very informative information that we're getting from the department. Can you teach it with your colleagues? I'm suspecting the young ones are taking what we are doing in the former young to themselves, but they are learning that when we are leading the department, you must not come here not having without taking information. That's why some of people who want to share, they must leave this house to the way that they are recuperating. They are still remembering the days that the information is not well presented. They must go and come back. We are not yet experiencing that. Do you disagree? You do respect your department and the portfolio committee that when you are coming here, you must prepare always. I was doing closing, not answering honor of my leader. Over protocol, chairperson, Mr. Valile, over here, where she find my condition, because I was not going to do much because this is a democracy. I can give you that opportunity.
I'm sorry, Chair. Just one quick one. Why does the check from the DC if we are the only country in the region that has the capacity to host the games? The reason I'm asking this question is that he has mentioned that Angola is the country that will be hosting the games, but it does not have the capacity. So my worry is as to how was it decided to say there is much to be hosted by Angola? Is there any other countries in the region that are well capacitated to host the games?
Before DG, because I want to talk about that, before he responded to you, about the search of the shooting is that sometimes in South Africa can host tries. Because the other countries will be rejecting, saying that they are not ready. But in this report of Ujiji, it's surprising. They were supposed to take us host to South Africa. Not everyone then that we must have was one of the host. Because we lack that, we saw them that we can do it. So it's not only in UNESCO. They always notion they don't have money. They don't have anything, so I want to speak after this. I thank you for the strategy. I thank the honorable members. It's time for election. Some they do prioritize this committee. Others they are bringing us to be on the ground, not knowing what is going on in their legislation. It's very important. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Honorable Madika, now we can give you a region. The region is full of many poor countries. Lesotho, Swaziland, Mozambique, and all of them quite poor. But we think Botswana is doing relatively well, that it should be able to meet its obligations, and it does. However, the reason I give the context to that, they've been vying for the position of Secretary General of the region for quite some time, and they've been losing for us because the rest of the other countries, this is one route for us to leave them. So Botswana has not taken it kindly to that, and I think they have decided that they would not do anything additional other than what they are simply obligated to do, which is just paying for this and providing office space and everything that's necessary as a host. But equally, why are we hosting and supporting these people? Many of the countries of the region, particularly Angola. Angola is a newest member in our region after the reconfiguration of this, and there's still a question of whether DRC as a member of SADC should also be party to Region 5 or not. But importantly, is that Angola at the time it did it, it didn't have the type of economic problems it has now. Their economy is highly dependent on oil. And after the price of oil collapsed, effectively. It wiped out their reserves and every other thing. So from an economic point of view, Angola is in dire straits, that its utilities are not even able to service their international bonds. And so the economy is on the verge of collapse, if I may put it that way. So with that changed status overnight, obviously the government had to do what we began doing 5 years ago, reprioritization. And we did demand that the diversion of resources from NAMCO to other things. You may argue They should have then went back to the region to say, let's have a substitute host. But let me tell you what is the problem. They have some of the things they can do. Originally, the games were supposed to be hosted in their web, but they were going to pay private hotels and the other thing. They have now taken a decision to move them to Rwanda, primarily because their governments have some establishments where athletes stay and so on, and at a much more affordable rate than they. Even the infrastructure they have thought that they will develop in them, whether they have abandoned those plans to go to the national stadium in Rwanda. So, which then means that they have managed to contain much of their costs that they were going to do, but they do not have the technical expertise to really host them. I think this is the story of the bulk of our countries in the region. The technical expertise are what is a big problem. Even Botswana, you may expect that they have this, but when they hosted the UK, you would recall that we had actually put up a team of 15 people, and even federations contributed. We had the best South Africa has to offer in tournaments. So that program was there. Russell Hall from football was part of the team. We had had to collect the best skills we had, and also from our own unit on mega events and hosting that major events. So we have actually put everybody into that team to help Botswana. We have helped Lesotho, we have helped Mozambique. It's rare, I guess, in the case with Mali, which hosted the African Cup of Nations, and they started 30 years and they ran out of money mid halfway when they were 80% complete. They ran out of money, which shows you the lack of project management skills. South Africa has intervened, Kenya had to pass a special grant. We had to finish and build the stadium in Mali, also give them a hosting grant to be able to pay volunteers and all of that. We did that with Mozambique. They had some money, and when the games were about to start, they realized that the money has run out and they no longer have enough. And again, a special request was made, and we had to support. Even with the Soto, whether to give them a 10 million grant, after they shut the games. Originally, they said they only want technical support from us. We sent personnel for about 3 months to work in this group to help prepare for games, from conducting draws and doing fixtures and all of those simple things that you may think that are quite simple, but the countries of the continent and some in our region do not have that capacity to do such simple work. But as time went on, it became very apparent that they don't have enough money to deliver on the basis of the game. So, and hence the 10 million grant. So, I'm just saying that it only starts like that. But equally, South Africa should never agree to the burden of having to agree to host everything. We cannot do that, because when it happens here in our country, the cost will be much more than what when we give a grant and we send it. So, and I think that's why it's okay that rotation must happen, and importantly too, it's also a capacity building exercise. Because one of those countries have gone with us and they've hosted one of those things once, the template remained with them for good. The experience of the local people has had. Even in Budawari, you would remember we went there for the other 23 days, and we did extremely well with them. We helped them, but today it's not possible for us to organize similar championships anymore. So it's also an increased effort in that regard. But yeah, we have a great responsibility in the region as the country to help support development. And we can't be an island of richness and poverty, frequency. So we have to support where we can within our means. It's our international obligation to do that. And I think that's why we're doing the work. Thank you.
Thank you. The chairperson has already signed the department. So we are left with can we go through the next week? Are we agreed that we go through the next week? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4, page 5,
89, 810, 87. Any questions? Okay. Can we then somebody move for the adoption? I have moves. Any second? Manana second. Quickly, I'm not sure because it's you have an interaction with it. But let's just go to week 3, set of letters already, week 4, week 5, week 6, week 7, week 8, each 9, each 10, each 10, the provincial trade unions be divided to meet the committee at the so you see that on page 10, that the provincial trade unions invited to meet the committee again. Professor Malachi.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that is the case of the point I wanted to be confused on. But I think the issue was that because there were some unions that did not come, and I think the decision was, if I remember very well, it was on those who did not come.
Okay.
Whether we do it coalition is another thing, but there was a strong resolution that those who were not present.
Okay. So, how do we take it forward? Or leave it to you so that you see how do we carry out that MSI? No, it's fine, but in terms of the fact that the MSI, in terms of implementation, you see how are we going to ensure that we need that decision of meeting those that were not there. Because I think it's important that we meet those that were not there. Okay? Is it fine? Okay. So, and then that is all, because the problem, I'm not sure whether member them called. You didn't see me. For when we come there. I'm good, but I'm not sure whether I'm invited. So you want us to go teach again? Maybe that teach us through.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just a quick one here on this problem. Let us recall that every financial year we're supposed to be having our APP. This part of the problem, because of the short term of this particular financial year and the cancellation of the meeting, we're supposed to have that meeting of the APP last week, but was cancelled due to changing the parliamentary program. But I will forward the APP to members. But given this name, the program here is informed by issues, one that are outstanding for members, but also the major priority that they come from. One being that there are issues that are already have the committee has made advantage when it comes to the transferring of MIG and all of the money. We have it here in the program just to make a follow-up to see what is the status and what are the future developments that could be undertaken. The sending one is obviously that one with the DBE, Department of Basic Education, with all the changes that are coming, also in terms of sending meeting. But many other issues that have been incorporated here, it's also outstanding matters that have always been postponed from the last financial year, meeting with all issues during with the changes also that we've had to postpone it. But we intend that it be the first meeting that we host, primarily because Hoki, the financial year, is the recipient of that one of 10 million that the department needs to the federation. But probably because we've been, we've always been postponing the meeting. Somehow also we brought the agenda back, you recall that the meeting was postponed on the last hour, previous time. University sport, primarily for, you know, high performance sport and academies that they are assisting with. And October is primarily reserved for e-triple-R. And hopefully by the end of this year, usually you know that the last week becomes oversigned, but also there's only a backlog of reports and to be considered in the house. So that final week usually becomes very short. It could be 3 days, it could be a full week. But that will be determined also by, you know, the changes in the parliamentary program. And the beginning of the year is always short as well because of the solar and the measures that take place. So we try to limit it here. If anything, more meetings that will be added, which is going to be next year, would be those, like this one that we're talking about, the follow-up with also, there are still meetings pending with boxing, with netball, and all the other federations that we have not had the opportunity to meet. But we've tried to prioritize issues that we thought are pressing and the committee has made so much inroads and we want to still keep up the momentum to understand the issues and get to the finality of the facilities, school sport, the federation that.
And so this is how the future looks like at the end of this year. Thank you.
Members, can we
note that? Are you happy that we have noted that, or we are happy with that?
That mean based on the follow-up of those provincial unions will only consider for next year? I mean, if we're saying, I'll just say, I mean, whether it's in related sport or end or not study, I mean, there we can do two in a day, because I just feel that by the time we're done, the issues. In a year, because I don't, I mean, you know, university sports, not to downplay their relevance, and I can't really take it for that long, you know, on that day. So if we can get those unions on that day, subject to the agreement of the committee, because other indicators, they now fall off over a period of time and priority changes and all that stuff.
Thank you, Honorable. This is our last week to have the engagement with whoever. And then if you look at this problem of Parliament, that's from 16th August. If we want to have a priority on those dates, I'm certain they can amend on that. But as today and Thursday, no committee meeting.
No, if the committee so agrees that we invite two stakeholders again, we will call the university for the information, you know, from the same day. It shouldn't be a problem. Yes.
One of the matters, if you want to agree on what I've proposed and what it is, say, no? Possible actions. Yes.
Last question. I was just supporting this on this university sport. If we can squeeze the union, if the university talks, the university has got a long presentation, it will be determined by their presentation.
Thank you. Honourable members, we agree that the amendment must be done likewise. Thank you so much. Is there any other thing that you want to? Okay.
I just wanted to make sure members, so this, the provincial union will be in on 6 September with his advisory board and 16 August will remain about the meeting.
No, it's proposing that once we want to come together, university sport and unions, we have a 16 August. Who's a committee day doesn't have anything. So let's give them that they must put something separating those two. It's either on the 16 we must call unions and then leave that September or call unions. I don't think that we must club because we want to do an excellent job. So let's take unions on the 16 August and then leave university sports on the ship. Thank you. Thank you so much, honorable members. Hoping to see you after the election and hoping that will come like a family. I've seen that the election year trying to do other things with this committee, but we are ready.